Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventures and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Mystical Magical Sorcerer.
Before we begin, we want to mention that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, a sorcerer, right? Whereas wizards are these smarty pants that get their magic from book learning about the nature of the universe, a sorcerer can sling fire or create ice just with their moxie alone. The force of personality combined with the mystical bloodline that sorcerer might have allows them to do everything a wizard can do.
Yes, sorcerers are your magic that isn't connected to... Well, it is connected to other things, but it's not connected to study, it's not connected to any kind of patron, it's not connected to any kind of god. It's really kind of just all built into you. There might be some history that connects it to other stuff, but you don't have to worry about speaking with anyone or communing with anyone or doing any studying. You're just ready to go. You have that magic and you can do that whenever. It kind of covers any remaining story angles you have really for a spellcaster. So you know, if you don't want to be following a god, you don't want to be a cleric, you don't want to be having to deal with any kind of mystery or any other intrigue, you can just be like, I just have magic, I have what I have, let's go.
Now, Luis, you brought up a good point to me a little bit earlier. You said that most of the time in pop culture media, when you see some type of spellcaster or mage, you're looking at a wizard. But I want to challenge you on that. I'd say that any one of those quote-unquote wizards that didn't have a book or didn't, like, directly tie their magic to reading, that could have been a sorcerer. Mm-hmm. Point in case... Doctor Strange, and yeah, I know, they took training to learn their powers and to learn their magic, but they don't need a book to, like, refresh themselves, right? I feel even a kobold who just has dragon blood and figures out, maybe they gotta learn how to control that power.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, other than the obvious, it's a wizard, or obvious, I feel like there's lots of witches in pop culture as well.
Oh, that's true. Lots of witches.
And they specifically call them out as witches. But other than that, I guess you could make an argument that any other spellcaster, anyone throwing magic around, could be a wizard. Could be a sorcerer. And in fact, the fact that you bring up that, you know, Doctor Strange has studied, but isn't necessarily a wizard. He is, in fact, a sorcerer, and at some points is a sorcerer supreme. I think that maybe even opens up the possibility for other people to be sorcerers, even though they might have been treated as wizards before. He does interact with magical items and relics and does study at times. You know, he does go through books and stuff, but maybe that's just how he levels up, right? He just unlocks more secrets that way, but he's saying he's not communing with the spell book or anything like that to prepare a spell. So yeah, that makes sense to me.
Remind me of something, because we had an episode where we made declarations about the Harry Potter kids.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I said they were wizards.
You said they were wizards. I argued that they could be sorcerers.
Oh, okay. No. I stand by it. They're not sorcerers. I tell you why. Because at the start of each day or whatever, they go open up their books and they refresh themselves on how to cast their spells.
Well, here's the thing. Once you learn Flipendo and know how to do that, they don't ever have to go back to a book to do that.
Well, maybe it's just off scene. You know, maybe they don't show them waking up in the morning and studying their books because there's enough scenes of them in their books.
I don't know. I still think they could be sorcerers in the Pathfinder rules, at least. They're wizards in their own world, but maybe what they call wizards are what we call sorcerers in the
game.
There's
definitely a good argument there to be made. Now,
or Lauren, they might be arcane sorcerers. You know, they have the arcane tradition, they have that specific feat, the arcane evolution, that grants them a book that they keep spells in, but they're otherwise sorcerers.
That's actually... I'm going to say that's on the money. That's pretty good right there. That's pretty good.
So they have a spell book like a wizard, but in fact, they're really sorcerers.
You know who else is kind of like a sorcerer? Batman. Uh-huh. Oh, so I'm led to believe.
Sure, he sure is. We always talk about how Batman dealing with magic would be like Batman having his random gadgets and utility belt and stuff like that. But sorcerers, they... don't get to change out their spells, or if they do, they don't get to do so as often as a wizard. You know, you can't do that every day. So I like to imagine that this is the aspect of Batman that has his dedicated no-nonsense. These are always the gadgets I go with. Here's my Batarang, here's my Bat Grappling Hook, here's my smoke bombs or whatever. Those are three things he always takes with him. He has dozens of them ready to go at any time, and he can use them whenever he needs, spontaneously deciding, I need a Batarang for this moment. And you know what supports that? His lots and lots of money that he got from his parents. It comes from his bloodline, if you will, that helps support his gadgets.
I was not prepared for that to work as well as it did. Bravo. Golf clap there for those listeners at home.
Now tell me, how is a Viking like a sorcerer?
Alright, so I want to give a little disclaimer first. Or a little bit of, I want to show you how the sausage is made, you know? Is that how people say? I think that's what people say.
Yes.
Yeah, so when I'm coming up with Viking stuff, which obviously I do all the time, I've got two precedents that I'm looking at. I've got historical Vikings, which I try to draw most of my inspiration from historical Vikings. But I also have fantasy Vikings, which is where the stuff that doesn't make sense from a Norwegian standpoint fits in. Anytime we're talking about magic, I think I have to lean a little bit more into the fantasy Vikings. But I still make that as inspired from the historical Vikings as possible. And the way I can do that here is with demigods. Okay? Mm-hmm. Thor famously flew through the sky and shot lightning bolts out, right? I mean, now imagine, okay, somebody who's been blessed by Thor, or maybe somebody who claims some descendancy from Thor, right? That might be a sorcerer. That might be a Viking who runs around and throws lightning bolts. Now, I mean, they're probably still going to be wearing splint mail and at the front of the charge, but, you know, that's still a pretty decent sorcerer. That's a little tougher, though, since I have never seen a Scandinavian fling a fireball. I've never seen it. Somebody send me a video of it, and then I can say that I've seen it. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the concept of a sorcerer. Let's talk a little bit about the specifics of a sorcerer. What's a sorcerer do in Pathfinder 2nd Edition?
Well, sorcerers get a key ability score in Charisma. That's their spellcasting ability score. And unlike, say, a cleric, I think it's very important to bump your charisma a lot. It's going to be it's going to help you use your spell attack rolls and your spell DCs. As for hit points, they get 6 plus their constitution modifier every level. And they begin trained in perception, trained in fortitude, trained in reflex, and expert in will for saving throws.
Depending on the bloodline that you pick, we'll talk more about that later, you're going to be trained in 2 skills of your choice and the 1 skill from your bloodline. You'll know about simple weapons, so don't be planning to just pick up a longsword and know what you're doing unless you have some reason you can do that, because sorcerer ain't there to help you. You're going to be trained in... You're untrained in all armor, and you are trained in your spell attack rolls and your spell DCs as indicated by your bloodline.
I guess I'll note, although you are trained, you are not trained in any armor, you are trained in unarmored, so you can still wear explorer's clothing and braces of armor and stuff to get a good benefit, but I still wouldn't recommend running into the fray for anything.
Can you imagine Okay, can you imagine a character who wasn't trained in unarmored and couldn't figure out how to wear explorer's clothing? Right? How do I wear these pants? Somebody help me. That'd be something, huh?
I guess explorer's clothing are like heavy pants. So they have like extra belt buckles than more, you know, or something like that.
Oh, okay. So this is like when your mom walks in the room and says, "I just don't know how you play these video games." It's not that they're, you know, somebody puts on these explorer's pants, and then they look at an actual explorer. "I don't know how you wear these pants."
Yeah. It's so like my wife goes climbing and hiking and stuff a lot, and she wears outdoor clothing, and if you're not someone who's used to getting all the right outdoor clothing, you might just not know how to use it or what to wear, and you're used to your everyday t-shirt and jeans or something.
You might only know how to turn a carabiner into a keychain and nothing else.
Exactly. So the first big thing that a sorcerer gets, which we mentioned just a moment ago, is their bloodline. This is what determines the type of spells they cast, the type of skills they receive, and a lot of other stuff. It gives you extra powers and stuff. The core rule book comes with, let me see, 10 different bloodlines to start with. So you have a lot of different options, and depending on your bloodline, you will end up with one of the four magical traditions: arcane, or divine, or primal, or occult. And you have all four options available among the 10 different bloodlines. And I think we can go into the bloodlines after we go through the rest of the class features. But know that that's probably your most important choice right out of the gate.
And know that this very strongly can influence who your character is, right? Like, if you pick an abyssal bloodline and your character knows that they have demonic essence that fuels their magic, they might think twice about their own personality, the way they use that magic. They might think twice about their ancestry or who their parents were. It's a big thing for a character. Mm-hmm. As part of having a bloodline and being a spellcaster, you can cast spells.
Ba-ba-ba.
Ba-ba-ba. But what makes you different than a wizard is that a wizard has books of spells, and they'll use whichever spells they need for the day by carefully selecting them. You don't do that. What you do is you will pick your two or three or four spells that you know. These are the spells that you know. And then you can cast any combination of those spells however many times per day that you're allowed to. So at first level, you might know two spells plus the one given to your bloodline, and you can cast three in any order. Same one three times, each of them once, however you want.
Those go into what's called your spell repertoire. Those are the spells that you know. And for the most part, your repertoire is going to be rather rigid. You're making selections of spells almost for your entire career. So picking shield as a cantrip means you're kind of stuck with shield as a cantrip forever. Picking magic missile at first level means you're stuck with first level magic missile for a long time. Though every time you level up, you do have the opportunity to swap some of the spells that you have in your repertoire for newer spells or different spells. But for the most part, assume you're making choices for life.
Now, I've got a note here, okay? Sorcerer is probably the class in second edition that I think I've played the most. And I definitely feel like this class, more than any other, benefits from the retraining rules, because you are allowed to retrain in your spell repertoire, and some of the decisions you make early on don't make a lot of sense later in the game. But maybe you needed to take heal at first level, but you don't need it at first level forever. So even though these are rigid, they are difficult to change, don't think that you can't do them, and be ready to do it. You know, spend a week, retrain a spell. It's going to help you a lot in the long run.
Next big thing that you get are signature spells at third level. You start choosing a specific spell for every level of spell. So you choose one at first level, one at second level, one to third level, all the way up through, I believe it goes all the way up to 10th level. But you choose that spell, let's say Magic Missile, and that spell that you've chosen as a signature spell, you can heighten freely. You can cast it with any other spell level slot that you wish. And if it's a higher level, you know, if at second level you choose Invisibility, you can... Or, no, Invisibility is a bad choice. Let's say you chose Heal as your second level signature spell. You can use the first level version or the higher level versions at any point. So you eventually end up with a handful of spells that you can kind of freely use as you need with whatever spell slots that you want.
I think the signature spells are probably your best tool for giving yourself access to a lot of different spells. In the Sorcerer that I've played the most... Most of my signature spells are low-level spells that I've prepared at higher levels just so I can have access to them again at low levels.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, all the way up through about 19th level, you're getting the basic stuff. Ability boosts, skill increases, you know, improvements to your saving throws and things like that. 19th level does give you access to Blood Paragon, which gives you two common 10th level spells and a 10th level spell slot, much like all of the other spellcasters, and you can take a feat at 20th level to give you another spell slot for that. But for the most part, that's it. Your spells and your bloodline really determine who you are for when you're playing a spellcaster, or when you're playing a sorcerer.
Let's talk about the best part of the sorcerer. Let's talk about the bloodlines. Every bloodline comes with a spell list. This tells you Which kind of spells you're pulling from. Are you pulling from Arcane? Are you pulling from Divine? You're going to get a number of skills that you're trained in. You're going to have granted spells. These are automatically added to your spell repertoire, and they don't count against the ones that you're allowed to learn at each level. You're going to get bloodline spells. These are focus powers, which are very cool because you can use them every 10 minutes. And finally, you're going to get a blood magic effect. Whenever you cast one of your bloodline spells or your granted spells, you're going to get whatever the nice little power is from your blood magic.
Yeah, two things to note about the entries in general. Your bloodline spells, everyone starts off with an initial focus spell at first level. The other two available that you could get at, I guess, 6th and 10th level are optional. You have to take a feat to take them, so if you don't want to grab the other ones, you don't have to, but if you do, just know that it's going to eat up one of your class feats or two of your class feats. And blood magic specifically calls out that you have to be using a spell with a spell slot, so using your granted cantrip from your bloodline won't count to trigger your blood magic. So just keep that in mind. You do have to put in a little bit of resource use to take advantage of your blood magic.
The first bloodline from the core rulebook is the Aberrant Bloodline. You are descended from cosmic entities beyond space. Lovecraft and Cthulhu are good friends of yours. You will use the occult spell list, and your blood magic's kind of interesting. Aberrant Whisper Shield, your target's mind or your own. Plus two saves against will saves. Kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Next up, Angelic Bloodline, which has connections to celestials, archons, and angels and the like. They grant you access to the divine tradition, give you diplomacy and religion as skills, and when you trigger your blood magic, it grants a protection aura, which grants a +1 status bonus to saving throws for you or your ally that got targeted with the spell.
I like the demonic bloodline. Demons are at play, the forces of chaos and from the abyss are in your blood, and you'll gain access to the divine spell list, which you might think, well, I don't need all this nice, pleasant stuff. No, no, no. The divine spell list is also harm and corruption and negative energy damage. And when you gain the blood magic effects, you can apply a status penalty to AC to your target, which is actually really strong, or you can give yourself a status bonus to intimidation.
Yeah, the status penalty is absolutely phenomenal as a player.
Imagine hitting somebody with a fear spell. That way they get frightened -1 to AC, minus one to AC from status penalty.
I actually looked into that earlier. Frightened gives you a status penalty to AC, so they don't
Of a gun.
So you gotta find some other spell to throw at them. I don't know.
Hit some
them
kind with of like circumstance a, penalty.
Yeah, hit them with something. Anyway, the next bloodline is a diabolic bloodline, which has connections to devils, specifically. And that grants you, again, the divine tradition, much like the demonic bloodline. All the nasty things that the evil gods can do. It's blood magic. Triggers hellfire. Any target takes one fire damage per spell level of the spell. And also, it gives you the option to instead go with plus one bonus to deception checks for a round.
Hmm. The draconic spell line. This one's pretty classic, right? The blood of dragons. I think in the original concepts of the sorcerer for tabletop role-playing games, I think it was just set that the default bloodline was draconic. So it's kind of nice to see it still here. And with the blood magic effect of this, you or your target will get dragon scales for one round that protect your AC by one.
Next up is elemental, which gives you the primal spell list. You have your connection to the elements, be it elementals, or might be somehow the plane of fire has touched your lineage somehow. Your blood magic is all about increasing elemental energy, and you gain either a plus one status bonus to intimidation checks, or really the one that most people care about is when you deal damage with the spell, you also deal an extra one damage per spell level. So a 10th level spell does 10 more damage just because your connection to the energy is so explosive and dangerous. One thing to note about the elemental bloodline, and as well as the draconic bloodline, when you choose these, you also had to kind of tie your connection even further to something. For the elemental bloodline, you choose either air, fire, earth, or water for your connection, and the draconic bloodline, you choose a type of dragon that you might be connected to, which determines stuff like your breath weapon and things like that.
Another one of my favorite bloodlines is the Fae bloodline, because pixies are cool and nobody can tell me different. You will get the primal spell list with the Fae bloodline, and your blood magic causes colorful Fae glamours to grant you or your target concealment for one round, but you can't use this concealment to hide because it's too pretty.
Next up is the Hag bloodline, which has connections to hag. You might have been cursed by a hag. Your parent might be a hag at some point in your, or some ancestor might be a hag. It grants you the occult spell list, and its blood magic kind of retaliates against people that attack you. After you've cast a spell, next creature that deals damage to you before the end of your next turn takes some mental damage because, you know, you're spiteful and you're going to get back at them.
The Imperial bloodline is the one that I think of when I think of elves. This is the bloodline that comes from some ancestor who was just a really strong magic user. Maybe even just a high-level wizard, and some of that latent magic has just kind of seeped into the offspring. You're going to get the arcane spell list with the Imperial, and because your ancestors are kind of the source of your power, you'll get a plus one status bonus to skill checks for one round with your blood magic.
And finally, we have the undead bloodline, which if you have some kind of touch of undead in your lineage, you are granted the divine spell list, and your blood magic either gives you temporary hit points because of your necromancy kind of connection, or it causes your target to take extra negative damage as a result. There are also several other bloodlines that are not in the core rulebook. I don't think we should go and describe all of them, but I will name them off real quick. Feel free to hop over to the APG. And check those out. If you're interested in the genie bloodline, or the nymph, or psychopomp, or the shadow bloodlines, that's the way to go. And check those out.
Now, Luis, we come to one of the best parts of Legend Lore. What kind of sorcerer build have you brought to us today?
Well, I went very classic. Sorcerer in Pathfinder has a history of being very good at just blowing things up with their spells. In Pathfinder 2nd edition, sorcerers have fewer spells than they would have in 1st edition, so you can't just go willy-nilly throwing fireballs everywhere. But I think there are ways to kind of make up for that and keep you going for a day and probably, once you get to higher levels, you'll probably still be good with blowing people up with all your spell slots instead of just like one or two per day. So I am going to choose an ancestry this time. I know typically I tell people, choose whatever. No, I'm going specifically with gnome, because gnomes are cool, very good at magic. And in this case, I'm picking the umbral gnome that gives you dark vision. That's whatever. Pick whatever heritage you want. At first level, I have my ancestry feat. I am taking first world magic, which gives me a primal cantrip. I don't know, something like electric arc is good. Whatever you want. But first world magic then ties into your fifth level ancestry feat, Energize Font, which requires that you have at least one innate spell from an ancestry feat that shares tradition with one of your focus spells. Hey, look at that. Your electric arc qualifies for this. Once per day, you can use your Energize Font action to recover a focus point. Good. That's very good. It's very good to be able to get a focus point back, because you don't usually get to do that unless you've taken the time to rest. So in the middle of a fight, if you're needing a focus point, you can use this to get that back and keep you going. And the ninth level ancestry feat I chose is First World Adept, which gives you Fairy Fire and Invisibility as innate spells. Those are just fun spells and, you know, give you a little bit of utility outside of your blastiness. The Sorcerer specifically, though, because we don't have a first level class feat, at second level, I'm going to take a first level class feat. I'm going to take Familiar. Familiar gives you a fun little animal buddy, and you know what familiars can do? You can take a specific master ability for the familiar that lets you, get a focus point back with the familiar focus. Hey, look, another way to get your familiar, or get your focus point back per day. Later on, at fourth level, I'm going to take the enhanced familiar, which gives us lots more abilities. Eventually, I'm going to say work towards getting spell battery, which gives you more spells per day. So, more blastiness per day. Sorcerer continues on. At 6th level, you take the... I realized I forgot to mention what bloodline I'm even taking. I'm taking the elemental bloodline, keyed to the air element that I mentioned earlier. You get lots of extra damage whenever you cast a damaging spell because of the elemental bloodline. Great. Blast more people. The reason I chose air is because at 6th level I take the advanced bloodline feat, which gives us a different focus spell. In this case, the focus spell is called Elemental Motion, and that gives you a cool movement type based on what element you're tied to. If you're tied to air, you get a fly speed. So you can use that focus point to get yourself fly speed and move around. Your initial focus spell is called Elemental Toss. You use that to deal damage, very easy free damage, so you don't have to use necessarily some of your really, really good slots. At 8th level, I take Cross-Blooded Evolution, which lets you pick one spell from any other tradition and add it to your repertoire, which is very powerful. If you need any utility, maybe you can tap into the Arcane tradition or the Occult tradition. If you need healing, you can tap into Divine. You can grab whatever you need, and you can change that out as you would any other repertoire spell, but it gives you a lot of versatility, at least comparatively, for what a sorcerer can do. And finally, at 10th level, I take Greater Bloodline, which gives us another focus spell. In this case, it gives us the Elemental Blast spell, which is just more blasty damage. Because we are of the Elemental Bloodline, we have the Primal spell list, and we get lots and lots of blasting and damaging spells. We get your lightning bolts and your fireballs at higher levels. We can summon volcanoes and stuff that deal damage. It's all really fun, and if you want to blow people up, there's no better way than having Mother Nature do it for you.
You know, I was so close to making the Blaster Sorcerer too, just because it's such a fun build. This is one of the first things that people even think about when they think about sorcerers. But I did something a little different this time. I have my own homebrew world that I've played my friends with, and I kind of took one of the concepts from that world, and I built it as a character. It's an orc officer from the Blasted Wastes, where all the magic kind of infused the world, and I kind of merged this with another one of the concepts from that setting, where one of the big bad guys is whatever. She rides a dragon. So I kind of made a draconic orc from the Blasted Wastes. And they all wear this pig iron that's been magically treated to withstand blows a little bit, and it's dark. And anyway, so yeah, this is very much so a gish. I've got an orc sorcerer with a draconic bloodline from the Badlands. My ancestry feats are for orc weapon familiarity, orc weapon carnage, and death's drums. Yeah. So what this character's gonna do? This character's gonna wade into the melee with the axe swinging all the way. Sentinel dedication to wear pig iron breastplate. Take bespell weapon at fourth level, so after I've thrown a spell out, I can take some of that magic and put it into the great axe. Advanced bloodline, because getting that extra focus point and getting dragon breath is pretty awesome. Bloodline resistance at 8th level gives me a +1 status bonus against magical spells and effects. And finally, 10th level, maybe the most important feat I've taken here. Signature spell expansion. Look, you are so starved. You are so limited by your small spell repertoire that signature spells are honestly your saving grace. It's really tough to have any kind of sorcerer build that doesn't use signature spell expansion unless you're relying on something else. Like my other sorcerer that I've played a lot with. She uses an animal companion, the Beastmaster dedication, to kind of get around not having a ton of spells, because that's how sorcerers do. But with signature spell expansion, I can make Fireball, Vampiric Touch, Magic Missile, and Sudden Bolt, and Lightning Bolt, all signature spells, just 1 through 3, right? That's a lot of blasting. And a little pro tip here, right? This is one of the most fun things that I think about sorcerers. You kind of have, especially as like a melee or like as a sorcerer that uses a weapon, right? If a fighter attacks, on their second attack, they're either going to have a -5 or a -4, depending on their build or whatever. As a sorcerer, though, if you use two actions to cast a spell that doesn't involve a spell attack roll, like say a lightning bolt or a fireball, you can then use your last action to strike with that weapon and you don't have any penalties on it. So I like to take advantage of sorcerers and use things like that. I think that's a fun way to do a little bit of extra deeps in your round.
Yeah. I'm afraid that the Magus may end up eating your sorcerer's lunch in a few months, but I still like the build a lot.
I think it will too, but until we get the Magus, this is what we have. I do have a lot of questions about the Magus, let's be honest. But speaking of questions, we have questions from our users in Discord. From Patron Dom, what sort of bloodlines would you like to see in the future?
Well, there's a lot of space that we can cover. I think if we look back at the 1E bloodlines, there's probably, I don't know, like a dozen, two dozen that have been left untouched still. Like the Phoenix bloodline, which was about healing with fire and stuff. That'd be fun. I think there's some very obvious space to cover. There are evil bloodlines and good bloodlines, but where are the lawful bloodlines and the chaotic bloodlines? Where's your Aeon bloodline and where's your Protean bloodline, right? Stuff like that. But I think in particular, I think I would like to bring back the 1E nanite bloodline. You have weird nanite or tech tied to you that gives you cool stuff. I think that'd be pretty fun. Or I don't know, maybe we can just do some brand new stuff that no one ever thought of. Storm bloodline, because you were born during a storm, or some other like meteorological event would be kind of fun, and then you can keep calling back on the weather or something.
I'd like to see us, so we've already started doing this a little bit. For example, in the core rule book, the elemental bloodline was given to us, but mm-hmm. then later we expanded on some of the elemental bloodlines, and we brought out the different Jani bloodlines, or the different genie bloodlines, right? And elemental even specifically mentions, its first three words are a genie ancestor, right? So we kind of took the elemental bloodline, and we expanded it in these more specified ways. I'd like to see that done for all of these. You know, for draconic, we could have a chromatic bloodline and a metallic bloodline. That'd be really cool, you know? We could go into the different kinds of angels, the different kinds of demons. This is what I'd like to see done with the bloodlines. There's another thing I'd like to see done with the bloodlines, and this ties into patron Jaina B's question, has Lauren written a Viking bloodline yet? All right. I'm working on it, okay? I first had the idea of I needed to make a Viking bloodline for my favorite character I've ever written, because hers is really difficult to write in any game setting, even the one that she's originally from, because so much of it just isn't in the books. It's so specified. It's so Valkyrie. So I kind of want to... I'm getting some heads together, and I'm seeing as people have time, and maybe we'll release it. Maybe we'll make it all nice, and we'll see. I'm getting there. I'm getting there, Jaina.
Actually, you talking about kind of getting into specific types of bloodlines, that more niche bloodlines, I guess, if you will, gave me a different idea, not specifically that, but I think it'd be cool to have variant versions of the current bloodline. So the elemental bloodline is all about blasting and blowing people up with fireballs and lightning bolts and the like. But what if, like, there was a way to swap out which bloodline spells you got? So the initial bloodline spell is like, you throw a little thing of fire. Cool, that's your focus spell. But what if you can choose, like, either the blasty one or maybe a defensive one that gives you a fire shield or something? And there are different bloodline spells for each bloodline. So elemental has two bloodline spells for each category, and you can choose one or the other. If you want to be more defensive, you can be more defensive. If you want to be more offensive, you can be more offensive. And maybe even variant bloodline magic power, your whatever those, your blood magic. What if, I don't know, I think it'd be kind of fun to just, instead of having to create a new bloodline for everything, if there's enough of a theme already there and you just need to tweak the theme just a little bit, if, you know, your diabolic bloodline wants to lean more into the manipulating and tricking people, maybe it just gives you a different set of blood magic or a different set of bloodline spells, rather than have to create a new, like, trickster bloodline or something.
I think that's a pretty good idea, and you could even make it more modular if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. At a point, you could say these are the granted spell lists that you can choose from. These are the blood magic effects that you could choose from. These are the bloodline spells you could choose from. Build your own element list. That'd be kind of neat, too.
Sounds like a lot of work, though.
Yes, it does. If only all we right. knew someone who was paid to create things for Pathfinder.
Oof. I'll let you know when I meet someone like that. Let's move on to our next question from user Lava Being, who asks, how do you make the most of your limited spells known as a sorcerer?
You carefully select your signature spells so that you're picking things which can heighten both forward and backwards. When you pick your new spell levels, like you go, I get fifth level spells now. Maybe you look at the fifth level spells, and if something only vaguely interests you, skip it. Go back and look at a heightened plus four. Go learn a heal heightened plus four as a signature spell at fifth level. That way all of your spell slots below don't have to be used on heal.
Yes, agreed entirely. I think the other thing you got to do is take advantage of your focus spells. You can get your focus points back in between combats, and if you can, if you have a very good focus spell, or at least one that you feel you won't complain about having to use every combat, go for it. Use those. Do what I did and find ways to get your focus points back with your familiar or other abilities, and take advantage of that. Otherwise, use your money to get you more spells. Buy a staff or something, or some wands, and use that to support your spell casting as well.
I kept another question in from Lava Bing because I thought it was a good one. Are there any mechanics specifically appropriate for sorcerers that players might often overlook or forget?
I think Lauren brought up one important one, which was that you can retrain your spells. That's an important thing. The other thing to keep in mind is that you have to add to your repertoire, outside of your signature spells, you have to add every heightened version of a spell that you want to cast. So if you don't have magic missile as a signature spell and you want to cast a third level magic missile, you have to add third level magic missile specifically to your repertoire. You have to add fourth level magic missile, so on and so forth, for every spell level that you want to be specifically heightened. Just because you have a first level magic missile doesn't mean you get all the other high level magic missiles or anything in between, unless it's a signature spell. So be very mindful of what is your signature spell, because what isn't your signature spell, you're going to have to take very specifically as your repertoire, which, personally, this is just me as a player, and I guess partially just as a designer, but, like, you know, I didn't write the rules. I gave whatever feedback I could, but I don't think that feels very great at my table. I think I would just, I don't know, I might find some other solution that does something else, but that is how spontaneous spellcasters do work, so keep that in mind.
You know, what if... Here's the idea for the homebrew at your table, okay? What if a signature spell you can heighten or lower as you wish, no penalty? What if for non-signature spells you can still do it, but maybe it costs you an extra spell slot?
Could be. Yeah, that might work.
Or an extra action?
Or it costs a higher level slot or something like...
I like the idea of an extra action. You spend an extra action, you use a fourth level spell slot to cast a fourth level heal, even though you only know it at first. That'd be pretty neat.
That would be. And I guess it does limit what spells you can cast. But you know what? If you wanted to cast that so bad, maybe you should have made it a signature spell.
That's right. That's right.
All right, one more question here from our user, Brian Lane. Can you explain the lore of why charisma, the ability you normally use to schmooze, scare, and swindle, is also the ability that indicates your innate command over the magic of the universe?
So, I can't go into the history of why charisma, but I can go into why it makes sense for me. We kind of hold charismatic people almost to having this magical ability to schmooze, scare, and swindle, right? Like, with your honeyed words, you can change the heart of a person. And with this, you're using your honeyed words to change the heart of a person with the charm spell. You know, I've always pictured your charisma is your force of personality, right? It's your willpower. Well, I guess I can't say it's your willpower because that's wisdom. Yeah, it's your force of personality, and you draw on that, right, to affect your way in the world. Think about it like this. Somebody who is very highly charismatic is very good with wordplay, typically, right? They'll be able to come up with really interesting things to say and ways to say it. Maybe this is the same way. Maybe in the world of magic, somebody who's good at wordplay might also, you know, have a talent for bending magic in ways that are interesting and exciting.
That's exactly what I was going to go with. Force of personality. You wield the power of yourself so well that you can draw upon the power of your magic. And unless you're confident in yourself, you won't be confident in your magic. So you got to be able to do that and use that to empower the spells that you cast.
I'm confident that that's all we have for you today, so make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.